Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I am thrilled to be able to bring you a bit of what I call the battle space of the war for the free world with some of the best in the business. And we're going to jump right into it with our first, who certainly qualifies in that department, Claudia Rosette, one of our country's top investigative reporters. You see her material frequently at Forbes.com, where she has a column at Pajamas Media. She has written in the past brilliantly for publications like the Wall Street Journal, and she has a marvelous piece that we're going to talk about today on UNESCO at National Review Online. And Claudia, nobody covers the United Nations and its various organizations and apparatuses better than you. You broke the story on oil for food and the shenanigans of the UN's various entities and Saddam Hussein's corruption. Saddam's gone, but the corruption lives on in this enterprise. And let's talk a little bit as a kind of microcosm of the larger problem, first about this business with UNESCO. Remind us what UNESCO is and what it's been doing lately and what it's doing at the moment.
UNESCO is, in theory, is the UN Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. So it sort of addresses everything on the planet with a particular humanitarian cast, you know, educating the world. In practice, it was so corrupt, even back in the early 80s, that President Reagan pulled the U.S. out. The U.S. returned under President Bush in 2003, and UNESCO has been toiling along at its enormous headquarters in Paris.
But, Claudia, let me just interrupt you. Remind us, Ronald Reagan pulled out because it was not simply corrupt, as I recall, but it was virulently anti-American.
Incredibly.
And we were funding a very substantial part of its budget, as we do the entire UN. A sensible decision, much condemned at the time, of course. But why was it George W. Bush got us back into the thing? Had it really been cleaned up and made over, and was there no further problem?
Really unclear, but the year was, it's becoming more clear, actually, but the year was 2003. That was the point at which President Bush was trying to win the UN over on his leading the invasion of Iraq, and there was sort of a great outcry in America that we need to be part of the multilateral community. We can't go against the UN on Iraq. Of course, the UN on Iraq at the time was utterly on the take. They were getting, you know, they were getting a 2.2% cut of Saddam Hussein's oil fields, which it was supposed to be supervising. But that was a period in which there was this drumbeat that under attack, you know, still fresh from the September 11th attacks, the U.S. had to turn to the support of the UN, which was actually busy undermining the U.S. at every
right.
turn.
I think this was the logic of getting into the Law of the Sea Treaty, too, which President Bush decided he would support at about the same time. Okay, so this lousy organization.
One more note, Frank, because this is important. There were also legislators, especially on the Democratic side, who wanted the U.S. back in. One of the staffers from Capitol Hill who worked on that is now President Obama's ambassador to UNESCO.
Uh-huh. This is David Killian. Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that brings us to the present moment when David Killian is hard at work trying to undo something that was done as a direct result of something UNESCO did last year. Tell us about that and why Killian and his team are now hard at work trying to undo it.
Yes. There is a U.S. law from the 1990s, which was not so long ago, which prohibits the U.S. from giving funding to any international organization that admits the Palestinians to, in other words, tries to confer statehood on them, or de facto statehood, before they have, in good faith, directly negotiated a deal with Israel. OK, Okay, the idea being to stop the Palestinians doing an end run, breaking all their promises, and simply trying to become a state while still wishing, while still aiming for the annihilation of Israel. Okay, there's that U.S. law. It's actually one law that was then amended. And regardless of this, knowing that this was in, that this was out there, last fall, UNESCO became the first UN organization to admit the Palestinians to full membership. That immediately triggered the U.S. pulling its funding, which
and this, this was
22% of UNESCO's budget.
Claudia Rosette, if I recall correctly, this was immediately after a major thrash in the UN Security Council, where the United States went to great lengths to ensure that this kind of recognition was not conferred by the Security Council. So this was really a poke in the eye of the United States by UNESCO.
Oh, Frank, this was Mahmoud Abbas, the head of the Palestinian Authority, had announced that he had this cutthroat deal with terrorist Hamas that runs Gaza, and they were kind of going to come together. It was a little unclear just how, because Hamas kept saying no, but they were going to be part of this unity government, and they were rebuffed at the Security Council. The U.S. said no, and it got nowhere because the Security Council has to recommend it to a General Assembly vote for the U.N. to say, we recognize and admit you as a state.
Right.
So Abbas went to UNESCO, where by a vote of 107-14, with 52 abstaining, clapping and cheering, they said, yes, you can be a full member. Now they've turned around, Frank. What they want is to be able to thumb their nose at the U.S., carry through with something that basically confers overwhelming approval on the Palestinians breaking their promises. That's what this is about, an end run just trying to get statehood while still having that Palestinian Authority logo that shows a map on which Israel has been eradicated.
Yeah, and with Hamas now formally part of the this unity government,
yeah.
No longer just a prospect. Now, Claudia, just to wrap this up, we have on the books a law that says we won't fund this organization if it does this. It's now in, I guess, seeking desperately to get the money back. This fellow David Killian, our ambassador, has as you pointed out in your piece in National Review, has pledged to continue to support the organization.
Oh.
And what are they doing to try to lobby Congress in ways that that would undo the statutory direction?
What they've done is something American voters really need to know about. The director, the Bulgarian director of UNESCO, Irina Bokova, has on her staff a former congressional aide to Nancy Pelosi. His name is George Papayannis. He worked as Representative Pelosi's communications director some years back. He is now working for UNESCO. He has been appointed with no job description or anything else, quietly, as the Washington liaison. He's actually carrying that business card now for UNESCO. His job being to work Washington. And the director general of UNESCO, Ms. Bokova, is herself right now on a 12-day swing, her second visit in 4 months, to the United States, the entire thrust of which is to lobby, talk to the press, talk to policymakers, talk to all sorts of pressure points, saying, poor UNESCO is now without its U.S. money. They're going along pointing out to program after program where if the U.S. does not resume sending money, okay, UNESCO has no intention of undoing the admission of the Palestinians. Ms. Bokova has done nothing in that regard. She's expressed zero interest in persuading UNESCO to change what it has done. What they want is that the United States should change its laws to accommodate UNESCO. Now, one of the things that you don't see is they're going around spoon-feeding to an utterly uncurious press, from what I have seen, these lines that UNESCO is this poor little underdog organization whose wonderful, worthy programs are now in jeopardy. Actually, Frank, when you start digging into that, it becomes quite questionable.
Right.
And what I'm seeing right now is as Ms. Bokova makes her way across the United States with the former Nancy Pelosi aide running her PR campaign and then planning to open an office. They've been looking for rental space in Washington, Frank, to continue this campaign.
Yep.
Is UNESCO propaganda is now popping up all over the place. And, Frank, the pressure is that the U.S. should change its laws to bow to a U.N. organization which thumbed its nose over a very important issue at the U.S. Oh, one last thing.
Very quickly, Carly, I've got to let you go.
One of the talking points is that this U.S. law that forbids funding to UNESCO, now that it's admitted the Palestinians, is, quote, old, quote, outdated. Frank, it's from actually the 90s, not so long ago.
And it's never been more appropriate under circumstances where people who are determined to destroy Israel are now running the Palestinian Authority. Claudia Rosette, thank you for fitting us in. We didn't get to nearly all of the things I wanted to talk with you about, but we'll have you back again soon. Thanks for this incredibly important and classic Rosette investigative report on UNESCO. Keep up the good work and keep coming back to us. Next up, we will be talking with Mark Thiessen about what's the stakes for us in Afghanistan if we lose. Straight ahead.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. Now, I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Mark Thiessen, the author of Courting Disaster, How the CIA Kept America Safe and How Barack Obama is Inviting the Next Attack. He is a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and one of the co-founders of Oval Office Writers, a credential he has by having not only written for the Oval Office, the occupant of it at the time, George W. Bush, but also for the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, and before that for Jesse Helms, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, a man of many parts, and always a great, great visit with Mark Thiessen. Mark, you've been writing in your column in the Washington Post this week about Afghanistan. And before we get to sort of your assessment of what the stakes are for us if we allow what seems to be now in prospect here of effectively a collapse there, just to introduce something that the administration is doing, which I'm afraid only accelerates that prospect, and that is agreeing to have special operations units that are currently conducting very successfully and very effectively night raids, subjected to warrants of some kind from Afghan judges. And I, if you care to comment on that idea, but more generally on how this is likely to play out if the policies and the weakness of this administration persist in Afghanistan.
Yeah, well, I would have to. I haven't seen the actual story you're talking about, but it seems to me that that would be just unacceptable. I mean, one of the reasons we reportedly didn't stay in Iraq is because we couldn't get immunity for our troops. So, I mean, it's just a standard operating procedure that we have SOFAs, the Special Status of Forces Agreements with these countries, where the American military stays under American military jurisdiction. If they commit crimes and they're tried by the military justice system, not by local judge.
Mark Thiessen, you have written in your Washington Post column this week about five real downside risks to the United States if the United States winds up, losing in Afghanistan or otherwise withdrawing in disrepair. Can you give us a sense of what those five are?
Well, sure. Everybody said, you know, there's a growing sentiment right now that we should get out. About half the American people said we should speed our withdrawal. And I don't think anybody's explained to them the consequences of what would happen if we did, in fact, follow that. And I came up with five really disastrous consequences. The first one simply is that the drone war against Al-Qaeda in Pakistan would end. It would come to a stop. The reality is that we're not right now doing these drone strikes from inside Pakistan because Pakistan has kicked us out. The tribal regions are about 1,000 miles from sea, so it's too far to do these, from Navy ships. And even Bagram, if we pull back to Bagram, just sort of a mega base in Bagram near Kabul, that's too far for anything but F-16. So the only way we can carry out these drone strikes is by flying them from forward bases near the Durand line, near the Afghan-Pakistan border. And if we lose those bases, and the ability to be out there in the pasture and heartland, we're not going to be able to carry out the strikes against Al-Qaeda. The reality is if the pasture and heartland is on fire, we're not going to be able to carry out those operations. If we're not helping the Afghan government stabilize the pasture and heartland, they're not going to let us keep bases there. And if we pull out, the Taliban will take over, and we certainly won't be able to carry out
strikes from there.
Yeah,
for sure.
So I mean, and on top of that, these strikes are dependent on intelligence networks that we've developed that are facilitated by the U.S. military presence in the Pashtun heartland. So we lose the military networks, we lose the bases, the drone strikes against Al-Qaeda cease, and Al-Qaeda is able to reconstitute itself in Pakistan in a safe haven there.
And
that's
presumably in Afghanistan in due course as well. Okay.
Exactly. Well, then that gets to the second risk. The second risk is that Pakistan falls to the extremists. If we stop the drone strikes and lift that pressure off of Al-Qaeda and the Taliban in the tribal regions, they will be free to not only reconstitute themselves, but to start focusing on overthrowing the Pakistani government. And so what you will have is either one of two scenarios. One, that they'll succeed in overthrowing the Pakistani government and get control of Pakistan's nuclear weapons. Or two, what you will see, this is the best-case scenario, is that all the people in the Pakistani establishment who have been supporting working with America against the Islamists will be marginalized. And the people who've been supporting, cooperating with, training, and arming the Islamists to try and co-opt them will be strengthened. So either way, Pakistan becomes an ally of terror.
Right. Even more so than it is today, arguably. Okay.
Exactly.
Three?
Exactly. Third, Al-Qaeda is going to regain its Afghan sanctuary. We will not be able to prevent, I mean, if we pull back, there will be a full blown out civil war in Afghanistan. And presumably the areas we pull out of that have not been stabilized, the Taliban will return, and if not take over the entire country, they will at least gain major swaths of the country, and territory back, which they don't have now, and they're going to invite Al-Qaeda back. And so you're going to have the situation where Al-Qaeda, which was the whole purpose of our mission after 9/11, in Afghanistan, was to drive to the Al-Qaeda out of Afghanistan and make sure they never ever got that sanctuary back, and they will get it back. And you will see videos, I promise you, there will be videos taken by Al-Qaeda, put out on the internet for everyone to see, of Al-Qaeda forces training terrorists in former American outposts, and it'll send a huge signal of weakness to the rest of the world, and they will be able to start planning and training for attacks against the homeland again.
It's not just weakness, I'm afraid, Mark Thiessen, it's defeat of the United States, which only begets more of it. Okay, item four.
Yep. They're going to be Al-Qaeda will be emboldened to strike us again. Bin Laden was extremely clear that what drove him and what gave him the confidence to carry out the 9/11 attacks was our American retreat in Beirut and later in Somalia. And he promised his followers that America would retreat from Afghanistan. We didn't have the will or the stomach for the long fight. We would retreat from Afghanistan just as we did from Beirut and Somalia before. Right now, bin Laden is seen as a failed figure. He was tracked down like an animal and killed. His forces were driven out of Pakistan, they're under pressure. And if we lift that pressure and we pull out precipitously, he's going to be seen not as a failed leader. The narrative will be of him as a martyred prophet who didn't live to see his vision fulfilled. And there, this is going to be a huge recruiting tool for the terrorists. And on top of that, it's going to embolden not just Al-Qaeda in Pakistan, but in Yemen and Somalia and other places to believe that they can strike us with impunity, that eventually we will fold up our tents and we don't have the stomach to do what's necessary to defeat them.
These are very serious concerns. Mark Thiessen is our guest from the American Enterprise Institute, former speechwriter and the author of numerous superb columns, including the one we're going through now. We have a minute and a half left. Give us number five, Mark Thiessen.
Number five is Iran would be strengthened. I mean, if you think about this, Iran has already achieved one of its major strategic objectives in the region, was to removal of all U.S. forces from Iraq. And now we're going, if we precipitously withdraw, they will achieve a second major strategic objective, which is the withdrawal of all U.S. forces or most U.S. forces from Afghanistan. And so we will be seen as running from the fifth poorest country in the world, unable to meet our commitments. Iran won't fear us because they know that we will send a signal of weakness. Most importantly, our friends and allies and partners and the people we need to isolate Iran won't trust us, so they'll see that once America comes in and when the fighting gets tough, we pull out, and the fence sitters will be more and have no reason to stand with us. All of that would make a diplomatic solution to the Iranian nuclear problem a lot more difficult and, quite frankly, make war with Iran much more likely.
Yeah. I can't disagree with a single one of your points, Mark Thiessen, and I think it's tremendous service to the country, as you have done repeatedly in your various incarnations, to have summarized it so well and so forthrightly at a time when, as you say, even people on the right are now beginning to join the head for the exits sort of mantra of Barack Obama, first and foremost. Mark, I hope, needless to say, that these kinds of problems will not eventuate and that we won't invite them to do so. If we don't, it will be in no small measure thanks to your good work. I hope you'll come back to us soon. We have much more to talk about, including about the effect of these defense budget cuts that the president has in mind and that are now in train, for that matter. Mark Thiessen, author of Courting Disaster and a columnist at the Washington Post. Thanks so much for joining us. Keep up the great work.
Thanks.
We'll talk with you again
very soon. Thanks for having me, Frank.
Yes,
take care.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131. That's 1-800-332-7131.
Do you want the big picture on national security and foreign policy? Find out what Ronald Reagan meant by peace through strength at SecureFreedomRadio.org. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder, here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag. It's a pouch. And it's not sand. It's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined by a senior fellow of the Center for Security Policy, I'm very pleased to say, a man who has been much in the public eye of late, thanks to his best-selling new book, Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. He is, of course, Kevin Freeman. He is the founder and chairman of Freeman Global Investment Counsel, which is a boutique investment advisory firm in the Dallas area, and a man who has really become, I think, one of the leading authorities on the whole phenomenon of economic warfare and financial terrorism. And Kevin, I'm particularly pleased to have a chance to visit with you because there's been a lot happening in that part of the battle space of what I think of as the war for the free world. Let's talk a little bit about Iran and the response that it has made to the U.S. sanctions regime cutting ever more, I guess, close to the bone.
Well, absolutely. The Iranians and the United States are locked in a economic war. There's no other way to term it. Even the American officials admit it to be such. The Iranians certainly view it as such. It is a clearinghouse for financial transactions, and it means that they can't access dollars for oil trade.
Right.
The good news is it's going to harm their domestic economy, and there's no doubt about it. It's working. The bad news is it's teaching them to begin trading in things other than dollars for their oil. And once that's recognized globally, that you can trade for oil in rupees or gold or any other currency or material, then the dollar loses its reserve currency status. And so we're playing a game of chicken, and we need to win it decisively and quickly, or otherwise we'll be the losers in the end.
We've talked in the past, Kevin Freeman, about the vital importance of the reserve currency status of the U.S. dollar. Do you think that this is really likely to translate into the end of that status, that it'll be just one of several reserve currencies, or there'll be a basket of currencies, as some have suggested, I think the Chinese among others, or is it still short of that kind of development at this point?
That is clearly the intent of the Iranians. It has the potential. We run that risk. We shouldn't enter into a warfare situation without understanding the enemy's capabilities. And I'm afraid that's what the Obama administration is doing. This level of arrogance and without understanding the economic implications, I think, is a serious problem that they're facing.
Yeah. Well, the president, after all, said he was going to fundamentally transform the United States of America when he was elected, and it certainly would be fundamentally transformative if we cease to have a reserve currency, among other reasons, as you've explained to me, Kevin Freeman, quite possibly greatly reducing our ability to cope with the kinds of financial warfare, machinations, attacks, whatever it, that you've documented in your book, Secret Weapon. Let's turn, if we can, to a kind of related point. Just in the past couple of days, we've had a chap from Goldman Sachs making news with the revelation that their firm is not particularly concerned about making money for its clients. What does that tell you about Wall Street and how it's been operating, and what does it mean for your thesis that we could be very vulnerable to attacks of this kind in the future?
Yes. Well, Greg Smith, who was not extremely senior, but certainly senior in Goldman Sachs, and been there for over a decade, very smart individual, he just said, "I can't take it anymore. This firm is too greedy. They put the needs of the client behind the needs of the firm." And that ties in directly with what we found in 2008, where firms like Goldman and others were willing to take the American economic system to the brink and allow naked short selling, credit default swaps, and other behavior that was bad for the economy, bad for the clients, but was profitable for the firm. And then when you factor in the idea that Muammar Gaddafi had $200 billion we found in Western markets, mm-hmm. you realize that kind of manipulation, if it's profitable, the firms would go along with it. If a terrorist is the one driving the profits, would they still go along? And what risk is there for our financial system?
Yeah. And the answer to that question is?
Huge. we saw just a couple of days ago in the Wall Street Journal, they announced that they found market manipulation taking the shape of manipulation, mafia-like tactics.
These are European regulators, as I understand.
European regulators,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so you have Gaddafi with money around the world. You've got Bin Laden, who had money around the world. And the Chinese certainly do, sovereign wealth funds. The risk is
Vladimir Putin.
Yes, Goldman Sachs will sell out to the sovereign wealth fund if that means profits for them, but it means Sharia-compliant finance for us, which funds jihad and so forth. So it's a serious problem. Wall Street greed and Washington ineptness combined to create the perfect storm in 2008, as I pointed out in the book, and it's continuing today.
Yeah. Kevin Freeman, in your book, you do talk about the continuing vulnerability. And I, as I recall, the sort of third wave of these attacks, the first being oil, the second being the naked short selling attack of September 11th, 2008. It began then, as you pointed it out. But the third wave being attack on the currency of the United States. Stitch these various pieces together, if you would, please. How the Iranian action, the attitude of Wall Street, at least Goldman, if it's representative, as an example, and this concern that there's huge money in the hands of some very, very bad folks that's now widely in our markets and therefore susceptible to this kind of manipulation?
Well, the Iranian economic war that we're experiencing has driven oil prices up maybe $30 a barrel higher than they normally would be. Mm. The threat to close the Straits of Hormuz, the paper oil manipulations, and so forth. That is just draining the West from money, and it's going to the Middle East. And so an extra $1 trillion over a couple of years is going into OPEC nations that are not friendly to us. So that's phase one. Phase two was the market manipulations. We're seeing it happen in Europe. It's being admitted to by European regulators that it is possible to use financial market instruments that are greed-driven. They were created for greedy purposes on Wall Street and in Europe, and they're being used to manipulate the price of securities. And that also is draining money from the West to those who are manipulating, but it's harming our economic system. And phase three, under the Obama administration, we've rapidly increased our debt. Much larger increase in debt under Obama in 3 years than we had in Bush in 8 years. And that means that the dollar, our paper, is worth less and less in the world markets. We have to print so much of it. And the risk there is that the Iranians and others are able to push that bet and the dollar goes down. And when it goes down, how do we fund our $16 trillion of debt without foreign participation? We don't. The only other way to do it is Federal Reserve money printing, and it destroys the value of the dollar. It leads to a serious problem, and that's what we described as phase three, a hyperinflation risk. And that's what we're facing right now.
Right. Kevin Freeman, your book, Secret Weapon, has been out and doing very well in the marketplace. Has it done well with government? Are you getting interest and feedback from people in positions of power who could do something about these threats? Very quickly, we've got about a minute.
Yes, I'm getting great feedback from people who are out of government, used to be in government from Clinton administration through the most recent Bush administration. Mm-hmm. Those currently in the president's administration have ignored it. I'm finding some fans in Congress that want to do something about it. So we are making traction since the book came out.
Well, needless to say, our purpose here at Secure Freedom Radio is to help you make such traction. Obviously, folks, from what you've just heard, there is a tremendous amount riding on this. We need people like Kevin Freeman who understand not only the threat of economic warfare and financial terrorism, but how it's being practiced, how it's being waged in this war for the free world, in positions of greater influence and authority, ideally. And Kevin, we hope that by exposing you to our audience and otherwise promoting what you're doing with us at the Center for Security Policy, among other places, we will be able to help get that done. Thank you so much for taking your time with us today, and we'll look forward to talking with you again very soon.
Thank you, Frank.
Next up, we will be talking with Jim Hansen. We'll get his boots on the ground perspective.
Want the big picture on national security and foreign policy? Find out what Ronald Reagan meant by peace through strength at securefreedomradio.org. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful, all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered.
We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Real. What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined as we are each week, I'm happy to say, by our friend Jim Hansen. He is a former special operator with the United States Army, a man who's perspective on these matters we are pleased to find from time to time at places like BigPeace.com and Black5.net, and, of course, here each week, bringing us what I think of as the boots-on-the-ground perspective on these matters of high policy that we spend a lot of time considering with our other guests. And, Jim, I know that you have, over the years, developed as much of a fascination with the antics of our vice president as have I. Vice President Joe Biden outdid himself at a fundraiser, I believe yesterday, in New Jersey, where he described the raid that took down Osama bin Laden as a plan that you'd have to go back 500 years to find one that was more audacious. As a military man who's been involved in a few military operations yourself, and I'm sure this is no knock on your colleagues in SEAL Team 6 who did an extraordinary job in that particular raid, but give us a sense of how you would rate this with Joe Biden's greatest hits.
You know, that's a tough call. You know, the problem with Joe is he is a
dumb quote a gas machine, so this was a tough one. I think the thing, we got to give him a little bit of slack on this, right? Because obviously he wasn't speaking from a military perspective because, you know, the Israeli raid on Entebbe, D-Day, I don't know, that wonderful time when George Washington crossed the Delaware to attack the British on Christmas Day, that all those kind of things might come to mind. He was speaking politically, as that is the only way the Obama administration looks at things. So from a political perspective, and with the possibility that this could derail his bosses and his reelection chances, I think it is quite clearly a bodacious, not even audacious. This was a bodacious raid. So I gotta defend my buddy Big Joe. You know, Crazy Uncle Joe, I think, had it dead on. This was a potential hit. They actually, you know, according to John Weissman, who wrote Kill Bin Laden, they actually polled whether or not the raid was a good idea and whether Obama would get in trouble later if we found out that he hadn't done it when they had a shot at him, you know. So I think they took a really big political risk on this, Frank. So let's cut him some slack.
Well, I think it's important to calibrate, and you've done so nicely, Jim Henson. I would say that I think when you were making those kind of calculations, the idea that he would have joined Bill Clinton in not taking the shot at Bin Laden when we had him would probably have been even more fatal to his presidency than trying to and failing. But anyway, let's move along.
Toujours l'audace.
There you go. Let's talk a little bit about Afghanistan. We have had a lot going on there in the past couple of days and weeks, Jim Henson. And I know you're following this closely, particularly, you know, from the perspective of comrades still on the ground over there. Let's calibrate here. We've got, at the moment, obviously considerable pressure, the political kind that you've just talked about on the Obama administration to get out, the pressure from the Karzai government to restrict our operations and reduce our footprint, the pressure to continue beating back the Taliban, which obviously the guys in uniform are still confronting at the moment, often in a very, very violent way. Talk to me about this idea, which was announced or at least exposed in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, Jim, about having one of the most effective tools that we are still using at the moment, namely night raids conducted by special operators like yourself, going after Taliban leadership figures literally in the dark of night, now being subjected to advance notice, we're told. A warrant has to be issued if the administration's proposal has it actually eventuates, by Afghan judges. What does that likely mean for the future success or even survival of our troops engaged in those kinds of missions?
You know, Frank, it's almost comical if it wasn't a life or death situation. The idea that we're going to loop the Afghan judicial system, to the extent that's even a phrase you can say with a straight face, into tactical raids is something that will make certain that any chance we had of catching any bad guys goes right out the window. I mean, there is enormous pressure on Karzai and on the Obama team to try and put a brave face on what is a withdrawal in the face of the enemy. There's no other way to put it. You know, that we're leaving. The Taliban is resurgent. They are running their flag up in some of the remoter areas already. They will continue to do so. And so they want to make it look like we are turning over our, you know, occupation authority to an actual legitimate government. There is no, in any reasonable use of the word, legitimate government in Afghanistan. There are no legitimate security forces, and their judicial system is a mockery. So the idea that we would loop them into the decision-making process and have them do a warrant before we go ahead and conduct a raid is just certain to ensure that our guys either walk into an ambush or, at a bare minimum, anybody we were hoping to scarf up is long gone. get there.
Yeah.
So you can write that off.
You put your finger on what I'd be particularly concerned about, Jim, is sending guys into traps where they know we're coming, and you know, we lost a helicopter with a huge number of some of our most valuable guys. They're all valuable, of course, but these are highly trained special operators, SEAL team folks, a few months back in a circumstance that you might well see a lot more of if this craziness goes forward. Jim, we also should talk at least briefly about your take on this episode. We now know the name of the individual and a bit of his history, Staff Sergeant Robert Bales, who has been accused of this massacre of innocent Afghans 2 weeks ago. Knowing what we know now, what do you make of this? Does it have any implications beyond the individual in question about the stresses that we're putting our troops through, the difficulties that are associated with separation of families and the like, or is this really a one-off problem that should be exclusively dealt with as such?
I think the worst outcome of this is that the guy's lawyer has already started floating the idea that this was a result of PTSD. And that is going to cause the entire crazed vet, you know, story to become front and center. And honestly, Frank, this is a guy who there was something wrong with him long before this. You know, he's had a history of events throughout his career and problems and any other number of episodes that would lead you to believe he had issues. Now, when you start talking about PTSD being the cause, you throw under the bus the hundreds of thousands of folks who have cycled through both Iraq and Afghanistan, didn't beat their wives, didn't crash their vehicles, you know, into bridge abutments and run away, and in the end didn't slaughter innocent civilians. PTSD is an illness that is caused by war but does not cause violent acts. There are almost, I'm unaware of any times where someone with PTSD had a proximate cause of a violent murder as a result of that. So I think it's going to, we need to squash that as quickly as possible and deal with this guy, like you said, as a, if he did it, then he's a murderous scumbag who can go to Leavenworth or face the death penalty, and every other honorable serving troop will salute as he walks past and you know, shamefully gets himself into a prison uniform.
Yeah. Jim Hansen's our guest once again. Let me just conclude in the less than a minute we have, Jim. Marines on the tarmac awaiting the arrival of the Secretary of Defense were told to disarm. Give us your quick synopsis of that circumstance and what it tells us about what's wrong with this picture.
It goes right back to trying to put a fig leaf on the idea that the Afghans are our allies. You know, we were in a situation where the Secretary of Defense wasn't about to walk in a room where our Afghan allies had weapons. So in order to put the facade of an actual alliance and the idea that we could trust them, or trust him as much as we trust our own troops, we took weapons away from the guys who would keep him safe just in case one of those Afghans snapped or didn't snap. So, yeah, it was a shameful event and just a sign of a failed strategic policy in Afghanistan.
Yeah, well, and he's lucky to have survived it. Jim Hansen, as always, thank you. We're grateful to you for your commentary, as always, and for your service to our country. We'll look forward to talking to you again next week, and we'll look forward to talking to the rest of you tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.